Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Archery's podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Chokepoint Capitalism, How Big Tech and Big Content Captured Creative Labor Markets, and How We Will Win Them Back, is a 2022 nonfiction work by Cory Doctorow and Rebecca Giblin that examines how concentrated corporate power reshapes creative industries. Rather than treating publishing, music, news, screenwriting, app development, and live entertainment as separate problems, the book argues that many of them are governed by the same structural logic firms position themselves between creators and audiences, control access to markets, and use that leverage to capture value that should flow to workers. Its purpose is both diagnostic and practical. The first half explains how choke points form through lock-in, scale, and weak competition, while the second half outlines policy and institutional responses that could restore bargaining power to creators. The book is written for readers interested in antitrust, labor rights, digital platforms, and cultural production, and it aims to connect economic theory with concrete reform proposals. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, how chokepoint capitalism turns creative markets into one-sided bottlenecks. The book's central concept is that powerful firms can dominate a market not simply by being large, but by controlling the narrow passage through which money, attention, or access must move. Doctorow and Giblin call this chokepoint capitalism. In creative industries, that means companies can stand between artists and their audiences, then use that position to set terms that would be impossible in a genuinely competitive market. The authors emphasize that this is not limited to one sector. Similar patterns appear in books, audiobooks, music streaming, news distribution, ticketing, and digital platforms. The important analytical move is to treat these industries as examples of a broader structural problem rather than isolated cases of bad business behavior. That framing helps explain why creators often feel individually replaceable and why standard market assumptions fail. If a platform becomes the primary gateway to listeners, readers, or viewers, then even popular creators may face weak bargaining power because exit is costly and alternatives are thin. The result is a market that looks active on the surface but behaves like a bottleneck underneath. Secondly, the lock-in strategy capturing users first, then suppliers, then competition. A major argument in the book is that dominant firms do not capture creative markets all at once. They follow a repeatable playbook. First, they lock in users by making a platform convenient, familiar, or indispensable. Next, they lock in suppliers, meaning creators and producers, by making the platform difficult to avoid if they want reach or income. Once both sides depend on the same intermediary, competition becomes much harder to sustain. The book uses this framework to interpret the behavior of major firms such as Amazon, Audible, Spotify, Live Nation, and Google. The key insight is that the power of these companies comes from coordination across different market layers, not just from one contract or one product. This also explains why creators can be trapped, even when they dislike the terms they need access to the audience, and the audience has already been funneled into the platform. In that environment, low pay, unfavorable royalties, and restrictive contracts are not accidental side effects but logical outcomes of the structure. By mapping the sequence of lock-in, the book shows why traditional consumer choice alone cannot fix a market that has already been engineered around dependency. Thirdly, monopsony power and the suppression of creator earnings. The book places special emphasis on monopsony, a market situation in which buyers have excessive power over sellers. In creative labor markets, the buyer may be a platform, distributor, publisher, promoter, or digital intermediary that has become so central that workers have very few realistic alternatives. Doctorow and Giblin argue that this is one reason compensation in many creative fields remains low relative to the value generated. The important point is not merely that corporations keep more profit, but that they can compress the share available to workers and investors because creators lack equal negotiating power. This is why the authors focus on wages, royalties, licensing, and contract terms rather than only on consumer prices. A creative market can appear successful if audiences enjoy cheap access, yet still be deeply distorted if the people producing the work cannot earn a fair return. The book connects this to broader cultural effects as well. When compensation is too weak, only those with outside resources can persist, which narrows who gets to participate in creative life. In that sense, monopsony is both an economic and a cultural problem, shaping not only income but the diversity of work that reaches the public. Fourthly, why the book moves from diagnosis to practical reform proposals. The second half of the book distinguishes it from many other critiques of platform capitalism because it does not stop at describing harm. Doctorow and Giblin propose specific remedies intended to widen market choke points and rebalance power. These include transparency rights, collective action and ownership, radical interoperability, contract terminations, job guarantees, and minimum wages for creative work. The point of these proposals is not that any single one will solve every problem, but that structural capture requires structural responses. Transparency can reveal how value is distributed. Interoperability can make it easier to leave a dominant platform without losing access to one's work or audience. Collective ownership and organized bargaining can improve negotiating leverage. Contract termination can help creators reclaim rights from long-term deals that no longer serve them. The book's reform agenda is practical in a specific sense. It seeks tools that can be translated into policy, labor organizing, technical design, and institutional change. That makes the book more than a critique of big companies. It is also an attempt to supply a reform vocabulary for people who want to intervene in the market rather than simply denounce it. Lastly, a labor and policy lens on culture. Not just a consumer tech critique. What makes the book especially notable is that it treats creative work as labor, not just content, and market power as a political issue, not just a technology issue. Many books about digital platforms focus on user harms, design flaws, or innovation policy. Chokepoint capitalism instead centers the people whose work produces books, songs, articles, performances, and software. That shift changes the argument substantially. It means the relevant questions are who controls access, who captures revenue, who negotiates terms, and who has the power to organize. It also broadens the audience beyond artists to include unions, policymakers, legal scholars, cultural institutions, and technologists. The book is strongest when it links antitrust, copyright, labor rights, and platform governance into one framework. Its scope helps readers understand why isolated reforms often fail if the underlying market structure stays intact. The cultural industries discussed in the book are not treated as exceptional. They are presented as early and visible examples of a wider pattern in modern capitalism. That is why the book matters beyond the arts. It offers a way to read concentrated digital markets as labor systems that can be analyzed, contested, and redesigned. In conclusion, Chokepoint Capitalism is best suited to readers who want a serious account of how platform concentration affects creative work, and who are interested in the intersection of antitrust, labor rights, copyright, and digital markets. Artists, writers, musicians, journalists, technologists, policy professionals, and students of media economics will all find value in it. Though it is also useful for general readers trying to understand why so many creative industries feel structurally squeezed. Its main intellectual benefit is that it gives a clear framework for seeing how market power operates across different sectors in similar ways. Its practical benefit is that it does not stop at diagnosis. It sketches reforms that can be used by organizers, lawmakers, and institutions. Compared with many books on big tech, it is unusually grounded in creative labor markets and unusually attentive to the mechanisms of bargaining power. Compared with many labor books, it is unusually focused on the role of intermediaries, platforms, and market design. That combination makes it stand out. It is not just a critique of corporate concentration, but a map of how creative markets became distorted and what it would take to make them fairer. If you would like to support Cory Doctorow, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.